On This Week in Enterprise Tech, what if I told you there were telecoms in the U.S. unregulated for years that were run by foreign governments? Sound like spy games? We'll talk about it. Your organization probably doesn't really know how big their attack surface is. Curtis will take us through that. Plus, Brian Kernis and I talk with a great guest, Kevin Wang, head of business operations at Sand Studio. He takes us through MDM and its necessities for organizations, especially ones with a remote workforce. Shouldn't miss it. It's Wyatt on the set. This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 397, recorded June 12th, 2020. Mind your devices with MDM. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. WWT's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab with more than $500 million of equipment, including solutions from key partners like HPE and Intel. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more about WWT and the ATC and become a member of their growing community, go to WWT.com/twit. And by ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/enterprise. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at 1/5 the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com and enter code ENTERPRISE. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise. But I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their fields, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's the senior editor over there at Dark Reading. Curtis, great to see you, my friend. How are you doing?
It is great to be here on a non-stormy day in Florida. We've had a bunch of storms, including a tornado that rolled through my neighborhood over the weekend. Wow. So this is wonderful. It's a pleasant temperature, calm winds, and all in all, a great day to be here on Twyatt.
It's great to have you. Well, speaking of experts, we also have a very busy person here as well. He's the geek in paradise, Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, how's the Chi family doing down there in the great state of Hawaii?
Oh, the family's good. You know, we're packing like crazy, trying to get the house ready to move for when the quarantine gets lifted and I can actually cross state lines again. But I am contemplating doing a midnight run on a city park to try and cut a branch on a tree so that my microwave actually can get through. It's only a 1-degree beam. It's pretty cool. You can actually get a microtick gigabit 60 gigahertz dish, a pair of them for under $300, and it'll give you a full duplex gig, but leaves on a tree block it. So especially when it gets rainy and the leaves are full of water and so forth. So we're contemplating a midnight run.
Nice, very nice. Well, you're building gigabit networks over wireless, and I'm having trouble with my Logitech wireless mouth in an open window in an open room here. So you're doing a lot more than I am, that's for sure. But thanks for being here, Jeebert. Well, speaking of interesting weeks, we have a really interesting week in the enterprise. We've all felt really uneasy about our device data kind of being stolen by state actors abroad. But what if I told you there were telecoms in the U.S. that have been unregulated for years and are actually run by foreign governments? Sound like spy games? Well, we'll talk about it. You ever wondered the attack surface your organization has? Well, I bet it's larger than you actually think. Curtis is going to take us through that. Plus, with remote workers at a high and you bring your own device to work, you might ask, well, do I need mobile device management? Well, Kevin Huang, head of business operations at Sand Studio, is going to talk MDM and how you can get up and running on MDM and start securing your endpoints. But first, it's been a busy week in the enterprise, so let's go ahead and jump and this week's blips. Now, if you and your organization have services or sites, you're probably familiar with SSL certificates and the renewal process. Nowadays, CDNs even warn you when your certificate's even going to expire. Now, in order to secure your internet connections, applications depend on the server presenting a valid certificate to the client. Now, the most common problem here, though, is the server certificate might be out of date. Now, normally, that's an easy fix. The server admin just goes and updates it. But in order to validate that certificate, the client must have a trusted root certificate from the issuing authority. Now, herein lies the issue for most devices out there, especially IoT and some mainstream electronics. The devices like smart TVs and refrigerators have a weakness, and it might cause them to actually start failing in the near future. Now, typically, root certificates have a long lifetime, such as around 25 years, but nevertheless, they do expire. And if one is embedded in a smart TV or a fridge or a security system, the consequence is that it will stop connecting while giving users little clue about what's actually gone wrong. Now, as an example, recently Roku streaming devices stopped working and had to be manually updated. And now an issue the company described as a global technical certificate expiration. Now, there was also issues at payment providers Stripe and Spreedly. Now, we're coming to a point in time now where there are lots of CA root certificates expiring in the next few years, simply because it's 20 plus years since the encrypted web really started up, and that's the lifetime of the root CA certificates. Now, this will catch up to some organizations, and it'll catch them off guard in a big way. Now, the smart TV manufacturers might release updates for a couple of years, but we're talking a decade or more if you want to resolve the actual problem. Now, Apple does a better job than most organizations in this particular problem. It keeps things up to date. But if you're running a service with legacy clients that need to consider how your choice of CA can affect them, we can continue to sound like a broken record here in Twyatt, but this is all part of a broader issue, which is we generally aren't fantastic at keeping things up to date, right? Well, hopefully manufacturers will soon get the message and keep our services upgraded.
Well, famously reliable Honda had a breakdown due to malware. Honda was forced to temporarily pause production and vehicle shipments at some of its plants around the world earlier this week due to a cyber attack. While production has resumed in most of its facilities, new details have emerged on the type of attack that shut the company down. Looking at the code, we identified several markers related to the Ekans Snake ransomware and several text strings containing the word Honda, said Jerome Segura, director of threat intelligence at Malwarebytes. Snake ransomware emerged in December 2019 and was relatively straightforward as a ransomware sample in terms of encrypting files and displaying a ransom note, though it also contained additional capabilities to forcibly halt several processes, including some linked to industrial control system operations. This indicates to many researchers that it was designed with manufacturers in mind as potential targets. Its authors recognized destructive attacks on manufacturing and industrial environments cause downtime, and downtime equals cost. By targeting ICS systems in these environments, they create a simple equation for their victims: the cost of downtime measured against the cost of the ransom.
Well, in this case, the story is about plundering of crypto keys from the ultra-secure Intel SGX makes Intel start scrambling again. For the past 2 years, modern CPUs, particularly those made by Intel, have been under siege by the unending series of attacks that makes it possible for highly skilled attackers to pluck passwords, encryption keys, and other secrets out of silicon resident memory. This last Tuesday, two separate academic teams disclosed two new and distinctive exploits that pierce Intel's software guard extension, by far the most sensitive region of the company's processors. Abbreviated as SGX, the protection is designed to provide a Fort Knox of sorts for the safekeeping of encryption keys and other sensitive data, even when the operating system or virtual machine running on top is badly or maliciously compromised. SGX works by creating trusted execution environments that protect sensitive code and data it works from monitoring or tampering by anyone else on the system. Key to the security and authenticity assurances of SGX is its creation of what are called enclaves, or blocks of secure memory. Enclave contents are encrypted before they leave the processor and are written in RAM. They are decrypted only after they return. The job of SGX is to safeguard the enclave memory and block access to its contents by anything other than their trusted part of the CPU. I just have to wonder if Intel is bungling their security due diligence or if they're just the biggest target on the block. Gotta feel bad for them. Either way, this is making Intel CPUs a harder choice for the data center.
Now, it wouldn't be an enterprise week without a leak. Now, this past week, the city of Knoxville, Tennessee, had to shut down large portions of its computer network after being hit overnight by a ransomware attack. Now, the attack was first noticed by members of the Knoxville Fire Department around 4:30 a.m. in the morning. Now, shortly after that, Knoxville Chief Operations Office sent an email to its employees notifying them of the breach, and he wrote to all employees saying, "Systems are currently following recommended protocols. This includes shutting down servers, our internet connections, and PCs. Please do not log into the network or use computer applications at this time." Well, that's after you actually log in your email and get this email. But early in the day, the next city's website was also unreachable. Knoxville finds itself in the company of a growing list of municipalities that have been hit by the scourge of ransomware. Now, two of the better-known incidents of ransomware affecting cities happened in 2018 in Atlanta and Baltimore, resulting in the cost of $7 million and $18 million, respectively. Now, Knoxville is the 51st U.S. state or municipal entity to be affected by ransomware this year. Now, in 2019, there have been tracked as many as 113 state and municipal government agencies that were infected by ransomware. Now, there's not enough information yet to determine which of the ransomware strains were used in the attack against Knoxville. However, on the good news side, there's no evidence that financial or personal identifiable information have been accessed. Well, actually, so far at least. If the data has been encrypted, it could have also been downloaded. So the time will tell whether the data shows up in auctions on the dark web. Now, as most of these stories end, Knoxville is looking for better ways to mitigate this in the future and ways to have fault tolerance with better backups.
Well, for many users, mobile banking means mobile theft. A recent surge in the use of mobile banking apps in the U.S. prompted the FBI this week to warn smartphone users to be on the lookout for increased mobile malware and fake apps. In a public service announcement Wednesday, the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center cited U.S. financial data indicating a 50% increase in mobile banking since the beginning of the year. 36% of Americans, in fact, said they plan on using mobile devices for banking, and 20% said they'll be visiting physical bank locations less often, the FBI said, citing recent studies. Individuals who are not cautious about where they download mobile apps from could end up installing banking trojans on their phones or tablets that are designed to steal online account login credentials. Often, the malware is concealed in or disguised as legitimate applications like games and productivity tools. Malicious apps that impersonate legitimate banking apps are another major issue. Such apps often look and behave almost exactly like legitimate banking apps and are designed to steal account login credentials as well. Now, mobile phishing is still another fast-growing problem. A recent study by security vendor Lookout showed a nearly 67% increase in mobile phishing encounters among corporate users in the U.S. Many of the campaigns are targeting mobile banking users. The FBI has urged mobile users in both personal and workplace environment to only obtain their banking and other apps from trusted app sources or their company's own mobile app stores. It also urged individuals to use strong passwords and enable two-factor authentication wherever it's available.
Apple plans to announce a transition to ARM for all Macs at WWDC 2020. At its World Developers Conference, WWDC, later this month, Apple plans to announce the beginning of its transition from Intel-based Macs to ARM-based ones with internally designed CPUs, according to a report from Bloomberg. The report comes from Mark Gurman, who has generally good track record on reporting the internal workings of Apple and cites, quote, people familiar with the plans. The sources say that Apple is working on at least three different system on chips for Macs. The first would be based on the A14, a processor planned for the new iPhone models coming later in 2020. The Mac processors would be manufactured by Apple partner TSMC, quote, using a 5-nanometer production technique. The project is codenamed Kalamata within Apple's walls. WWDC begins on June 22nd. For the first time in its history, it will be an online-only event this year, a result of concerns related to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Bloomberg report notes twice that world events and other factors make it possible Apple will delay the announcement, but the company's leadership wants to share the plans at WWDC if possible as a way to give Mac software developers ample time to adjust to the change, which is expected to begin with the launch of their first ARM Mac hardware in 2021. So following up on my previous blip, one has to just wonder if this move is also being driven by Intel's string of CPU security problems for the silicon giant.
Now, it's always interesting to hear the latest in spy tech. Now, sometimes they take novel ideas and use them in extraordinary ways. Now, the list of sophisticated eavesdropping techniques has steadily grown over the years, with such models as wiretaps, hacked phones, bugs in the wall, even bouncing lasers off a building's glass to pick up conversations inside. But I think it's time we add another tool for audio spies: any light bulb in a room that might be visible from a window. That's right. A light bulb. Now, I bet you have one of those right next to you right now, right? Well, researchers from Israel say that they revealed a new technique for long-distance eavesdropping they call lamp phone. Now, they say it allows anyone with a laptop, less than $1,000 of equipment, just a telescope and $400 electro-optical sensor, to listen in on any sounds in the room that's hundreds of feet away in real time simply by observing the minuscule vibrations those sounds create on the glass surface of a light bulb inside. Now, measuring the tiny changes in light output from the bulb that those vibrations cause, the researchers show that a spy can pick up sound clearly enough to discern the contents of the conversation or even recognize a piece of music. Now, what might also surprise is that any sound in the room can be recovered from the room with no requirement to hack anything and no device in the room. You just need a line of sight to a hanging light bulb, and that's it. Now, Stanford computer scientist and cryptographer Dan Bonet argues that the researcher's technique still represents a significant and potential practically new form of what he calls side channel attacks. Now, one that takes advantage actually of unintended leakage of information to steal secrets. Now, if you're concerned that you will be subject to such attack, there's a good news, especially for the tinfoil hat people out there. Just cover any hanging light bulbs, or better yet, close the curtains. Now, if you're paranoid enough to be concerned about this sort of spy game, hopefully you've already used anti-vibration devices on those windows to prevent eavesdropping with a laser microphone. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's Worldwide Technology. Now, I can tell you one thing. I've visited this Advanced Technology Center, and if you have a chance to go, you should definitely go because it's truly amazing place to be. Now, I've used Worldwide Technology's Quick Start architectures before to create a proof of concept, and in fact, I did some integration testing with it, and I can definitely tell you it will save you time and money. Now, they began building it 10 years ago, and it's grown exponentially. It's really like no other testing and research lab you've ever seen. Now, listen to what the lab actually contains. More than $500 million in equipment from hundreds of OEMs and key partners, ranging from high-tech heavyweights like HPE and Intel to disruptors like Equinix. Now, when you are developing products, you actually want to work with an organization you can trust, right? Well, especially in the long term. Well, WWT is that trusted partner that will stay with you over the years. In fact, many of their customers have been with them for over a decade because they know WWT is where they can go to get the answers they need to make sure their business runs right. Now, their ATC is an incubator for IT innovation. Now, you can have schedulable and on-demand labs like HPE's InfoSight Lab, along with hundreds of other labs representing the newest advances in cloud-based machine learning to provide global insights into the status and health of infrastructure in one location, and much, much more. Now, learn about products before you launch. WWT's engineers use these environments to quickly spin up proof of concepts and pilots using the sandbox so customers can confidently select the best solution. Now, in many cases, this reduces concept time from months to weeks, which actually increases speed to market. Now, they offer lab as a service as well. It's a dedicated lab space within the ATC. Here, customers can perform programmatic testing using the vast technology ecosystem that WWT has already built. Now, it's virtual, so you can take full advantage of the ATC's unique benefits anywhere in the world 24/7. Now, WWT's engineers are in these labs every day. They're beta testing new solutions based on the latest and greatest HPE technologies, and they're building reference architectures and custom integrations to help their customers make decisions and see results faster and with much less investment. Now, WWT has launched their new digital platform encompassing the ATC ecosystem. Now, this ecosystem creates a multiplier effect of knowledge, speed, and agility anytime, anywhere around the world for their customers. Now, get access to articles, case studies, hands-on labs, and other tools that make the difference in today's fast-paced world. To learn more and discover why organizations across industries turn to WWT to guide them through their digital transformation journey, visit WWT.com/twit. And don't forget to create a My WWT account to access resources available through WWT's Advanced Technology Center ecosystem. That's WWT.com/twit. WWT, delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. And we thank WWT for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, if the announcements of foreign devices companies using people's data unknowingly surprise you, I bet you'll be even more surprised when you hear that there are actually three carriers headquartered in China and owned by the Chinese government that operate in the U.S. and have been operating for nearly 20 years with little to no oversight from the federal government. That's right. Now, China Telecom America, CTA, China Unicom America, CUA, and ComNet USA are three of the floating island carriers that are called out in a recent report written by the U.S. Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on investigations. Now, according to the report, and information we already know, is that the Chinese government engages in cyber and economic espionage efforts against the U.S. However, the part you might not know is that they use telecom carriers operating in the United States to potentially further these efforts. Now, the report comes 2 months after the FCC stepped up in its scrutiny of telecom companies controlled by the Chinese government. The FCC issued orders to China Telecom, China Unicom, and ComNet owner Pacific Networks, directing them to, quote, to explain why the commission should not start the process of revoking their domestic and international section authorizations, enabling them to operate in the United States. But the FCC and other agencies had previously failed to exercise proper oversight of these companies that the Senate actually reports here. Now, when the China Telecom applied for the authorization to operate in the U.S. in 2001, Team Telecom did not object, and FCC thus streamlined the application and improved it 2 weeks after accepting it for filing. Now, Team Telecom finally began substantive oversight of CTA in 2017, in part with a site visit that, quote, identified certain concerns related to CTA's storage of U.S. customer data. Now, even after being asked to supply data, Team Telecom provided no records of explanation or explanation of it conducting further interviews. Now, the hands-off approach changed by April 2020 when Team Telecom recommended the FCC revoke and terminate CTA's Section 214 authorizations because of, quote, substantial and unacceptable national security risks. Now, Team Telecom warned that CTA's facilities-based authorization allowed it to request interconnections with the U.S. carriers and that CTA had, quote, already established relationships with major U.S. carriers, including Verizon, CenturyLink, and AT&T. The FCC is still considering Team Telecom recommendations to revoke CTA's authorizations. Now, I do want to bring my co-host back in, starting with you first, Curtis. Is the damage already done here? Can they really prove that these telecoms have done anything wrong now?
Well, I think it's going to be very difficult to prove any sort of damage or, for that matter, any sort of intent now that the telecoms are aware that someone is looking very deeply into their operations. This is one of those things where it's very difficult to have both an unregulated environment and an environment where there's a lot of scrutiny of certain companies. You kind of have to choose one or the other. We have, over the last 30 or 40 years, gone down the path of less and less regulation, less and less oversight, because we've been told that this is better and better for business and for consumers. I think it could very well be better for shareholders, but this is an example of the advantages to consumers being largely theoretical.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because they're too far along here. And Cheaper, I want to throw this to you. What do you think? Is the only way to really fix this now is to just revoke their ability to operate in the U.S.?
I don't know. You know, one has to wonder, are they trying to basically tap the United States? So keep in mind, the whole deal with the internet is transiting between different ISPs. If these three fairly major ISPs are positioning themselves and then undercutting the transition rates between, you know, when they move from one side of America to another, whatever, they've automatically just put themselves into a place where they've created a perfect place for man-in-the-middle attacks, a perfect place to insert taps and things like that. Now, so that's the Chicken Little point of view. Now, the other point of view is, gee, if they're going to do that, then the United States carriers should be able to do the same thing in China. I'm pretty sure they'll be given all kinds of extra money from the CIA and NSA to be able to go and do startups in China so they can do the exact same thing. And, gee, that would be perfect for the NSA. So, yeah, China, I can see what you want to do. You know, it's a great business model. But if you're going to purposely undercut competition, expect the United States to do the exact same thing to your homeland.
Right. Now, Curtis, this sounds like a time, if any, for some legal guidance on ownership of telecom companies in the U.S. by foreign powers, doesn't it?
Well, you would think so, but then you start getting into companies like Deutsche Telekom, which is the primary owner of T-Mobile, SoftBank, which is the Japanese owner of a number of telecom interests here in the U.S. You know, it's difficult, not impossible, but difficult to write a highly targeted law that only affects the people that you want it to affect. For an example, in an entirely different area, let's look at what happened in California when they wanted to have Uber and Lyft treat their drivers as employees. They've ended up having a huge negative impact on things like journalism and the motion picture industry because of the way they structure their business. The law of unintended consequences is going to be at work no matter how noble your intention. And this is one where I think they would have to carve out some very, very specific laws if they just wanted to prevent those from one nation from owning telecoms.
Well, I'm sure things will unfold in the coming weeks. And I also am sure that we'll see some regulation coming very, very soon. But one thing I'm actually wondering about, Curtis, is, you know, lots of organizations think, hey, they've covered their attack services, they've had firewalls, and they've done the right things. But do they really know how large their attack service is? What do you think?
Well, you know, there's a lot of research that says that the attack services at most businesses is much larger than their executives believe. Especially lately when companies have been focused on employee system and cloud infrastructure because of all the work from home changes, they're not capturing the true extent of their attack surface area, which includes things like phishing domains using a business's brand, counterfeit mobile apps, and vulnerable web frameworks and plugins. This is according to a survey of vulnerabilities published earlier this week. In its analysis of an attack surface report, security firm RiskIQ found that a quarter of the top 10,000 Alexa domains had servers running at least one vulnerable web component, and that the largest companies typically had more than 300 expired certificates. Now, both of these are things that we've been talking about here on Twiat for a long time and right up till today, and all of these are going on development testing sites, which are accessible from the internet. It is just over and over and over again that we see things like outdated versions of PHP, domains using brand lookalikes, or for that matter, small components from open source projects that are not currently supported. The sheer variety of potentially vulnerable components underscores the fact that companies often don't know about all the assets and potential vulnerabilities that they've exposed to the internet. Now, the vast majority of external breaches are due to vulnerabilities into which a company has no visibility or perhaps once lost visibility but has lost it. For example, the massive data breach that hit Equifax originated in a server with a known vulnerability in Apache Struts that the company believed had been patched. Other breaches have been caused by companies leaving misconfigured storage servers, especially S3 buckets, open to public access. Research has found that 71% of applications used in open source libraries tend to have a known vulnerability. And the average large enterprise has almost 8,500 hosts, almost 2,000 domains, and nearly 5,000 live websites. Now, think about that. The average large enterprise has more than 5,000 live websites. Now, just the sheer size of the footprint means that it's going to be borderline impossible for these companies to lock down their surface attack areas. So the problem is getting worse. Overall, the internet grows by more than 200,000 domains and 55 million hosts per day. Let's say that again. The internet grows by more than 200,000 domains and 55 million hosts per day. So using just the biggest companies as an example, Risk IQ, the company we were talking about, has said that these companies have huge attack surface areas. Smaller companies, they say, have smaller attack surfaces. The biggest danger for both, though, is having pieces of an attack surface that they don't know they have. Can't tell you how many CIOs I've interviewed where I've asked them how many domains they have, how frequently they're using open source software in their enterprise, how many cloud apps they're using. And after a rigorous audit has done, we found that their answers have been off by an order of magnitude. So let me ask first, Lou, do you think that most of the CIOs out there, most of the security executives, have any idea how big their attack surface is? Or do you think that they're happy in their blissful ignorance?
I think all executives live in some sort of bubble. I definitely believe that. But I think that, you know, if their IT organization is doing the right thing with, you know, producing services that are doing alerting and they're watching traffic, then maybe they are informed. But I would say most often than not, a lot of organizations I've seen or worked with are definitely kind of clueless to all the different edges in their network. And in fact, even themselves being an edge, you know, whether they're working on their own device or they're working on, you know, off the network, they're working remotely on a device, installing services and other things on those devices. So just really knowing the extent of it, I just think it's, like you said, ignorance is bliss, I think, at this point. And I see a lot more organizations taking on tooling and services to help them with this to gain more visibility, for sure.
Well, gaining visibility is a critical issue. But Brian, I want to turn to you because I know that you're very aware of a lot of the open source projects out there, and you're a big proponent of open source projects. But for an organization of any size, anything bigger than a mom and pop, even if they know what their exposure is there anything they can realistically do about it? Or is this a case where knowing the risk and mediating the risk are two entirely separate instances?
Well, I think we've got an even more basic problem. A lot of these smaller organizations, a lot of research, academics, and so forth, have a really big lack of respect for IT professionals. They don't want to spend the money on it. I can't tell you how many small mom and pop stores have gone in, and it's a clerical or a secretary or someone like that that's running their IT. And they're doing it off something akin to a recipe book. So many times I've gone into a mom and pop organization and they are years out of date on updates. So one of the things I've just was working on earlier today was how to purposely delay Windows 10 updates. It's actually harder than you'd think to do that. And I'm really, really sure if we manage to get some Windows 10 designers and managers into a room and get, you know, them to speak honestly about it, is that is probably a move that was done on purpose to try and combat the fact that the vast majority of America or the world don't update on a regular basis. So unless you're willing to go into the guts of the operating system, you can only easily postpone a Windows update for 14 days. So this is one of those things that's happening. I can't tell you how many vulnerabilities a major research project has because, like, for instance, the one that I'm working on, I was only funded 10%. And this is really, really, really common for a lot of major research projects where they consider IT spending to be so far down on the priority list that that's the kind of funding they're willing to give for IT support. So I think the United States, especially world in general, is actually making their own bed. And a lot of these updates, a lot of these security holes and so forth are being left undone because so many people are ignoring IT as a profession unless they're a large organization.
Well, ignoring the professionals, downgrading the respect given professionals, these are things that we're hearing a lot right now, especially as companies sort of retrench and focus on things like revenue over security during the pandemic. It's going to turn around and bite them, guaranteed. And that's going to give us a lot more to talk about, both in my day job over at Dark Reading and here on TWiET. Well, we've got plenty to talk about on this episode of TWiET. We're going to get to it in just a minute. But first, I think that Lou has some company that he would like you to hear about. Lou, back over to you.
Thank you, Curtis. Yeah, that's right. Next up, our guest is going to take us through some pretty fancy MDM questions and some topics there. But before we get to that, we're going to thank another great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that is ExpressVPN. Now, when I travel for business, I need a way to ensure that my data is safe, right? No matter what internet connection I'm using, like me, you probably hop between Wi-Fi networks, or even abroad, you tether your device or maybe even a hotspot. But that might be on an unfamiliar network, right? Well, what better way to ensure your security and privacy than by using ExpressVPN? Now, when I use it, I don't even know I'm using it because the number of global nodes help and the speed of a network is awesome. Now, the latency is really low and I don't even notice it even when I'm watching videos. Now, I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't you just use incognito mode in the browser, right? Well, let me tell you something. Incognito mode doesn't hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you're in or use, how many times you clear your browser cache or history, the internet service provider can still use every single website you've ever visited. They can still see that. That's why even when I'm home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. Now, it doesn't matter if you get your internet from Verizon or Comcast or any other local ISP. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your information to companies. Now, ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISPs can't see the sites you visit. Now, ExpressVPN also keeps all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Now, most of the time, I didn't even realize I have ExpressVPN. In fact, I have it on right now. It runs so seamlessly in the background. It's so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. That's it. ExpressVPN is available on all of your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV. That's right. So there's no excuse for you to not be using ExpressVPN. Now, protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit my exclusive link, expressvpn.com/enterprise, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/enterprise, expressvpn.com/enterprise to learn more. And we thank ExpressVPN for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Ride. Today we have Kevin Huang, Head of Business Operations at Sand Studio. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into MDM, because I know our audience loves hearing about some new technology, some new options, they also love hearing about people's journey through tech. Can you maybe take us through your journey through tech and what it brought to you to Sand Studio?
Absolutely. So in the past 20-year experience in software, I've actually been in several roles. I've been a product manager, project manager, in marketing and sales. You know, I'm sort of an entrepreneur person who prefers to participate in journeys, you know, during its startup phase. So the past projects I've involved in, including, you know, building an internet advertising network, you know, working on the software project that does PC backup and recovery, and I also pushed the software product to OEM, you know, to bundle with the PC in the OEM space, you know, have it shipped out to the market, and I also worked for a startup that developed 3D technology, 3D software technology for feature phones. Oh, that was back in the feature phone era. And I also worked in projects such as location-based services. So this is more on the mobile internet side. So like I said, my focus on in the past couple of decades have been in projects in the startup modes. So it's been a interesting journey. I kind of witnessed the paradigm shift from internet to mobile internet, from software to SaaS or software as a service. So it's very interesting to see that everything kind of just joined together as what we see today. So I'm sort of the person who, whatever I do, I like to work on projects or products that has the potential to change people's lives, you know, to improve people's lives or operations of all kinds of businesses. So that's the biggest reward I get from my projects. So due to the above reasons, this is why I joined Sand Studio a couple of years ago.
Fantastic. Now, our audience is pretty tech savvy. They manage some complex networks out there and organizations, but MDM can sometimes be a mystery to them. Can you maybe take us through the basics and maybe what some of the advantages are of it?
Sure. Perhaps I can answer this question from how MDM has evolved in the past years. So the term MDM really is not something you can read right out of dictionary. So it really depends on what industry you're facing, what problems or pain points you have. So for us, for Sand Studio, we have this product called AirJoy Business. So it's a B2B product just to rewind a little bit, our company started back in 2011, and it's not really a startup, you know, when I joined, but I actually joined this project when AirJoy's business started. So the company started back in 2011 in the consumer market. So we had this product called AirJoy, and the primary feature for AirJoy is to have people access their smartphones remotely, you know, from PC without having to be connected through a USB cable. So a very typical use case is that when you're at work, you have your phone in your pocket, your bag, you know, and it's quite inconvenient that you have to take the phone out of your pocket very frequently. So instead, you can access the smartphone from your PC, you know, to do several primary tasks, such as receiving and sending SMS messages, uploading, downloading pictures. You know, a lot of people use AirJoy for backing up their phones, you know, for the personal data, et cetera, and doing two-way file transfer, you know, all that. So AirJoy has become a blockbuster on Google Play, you know, ever since till today. So moving down a few years later, we noticed that this is a special trend that a lot of AirJoy users are actually using a product for business purposes. So that was a very interesting finding. The reason why we had such discoveries is because we have customers come ask us, you know, how I can deploy this application, you know, in my business environment, on company-owned devices, you know, and even on non-smartphone and tablet devices, such as digital signage displays, point-of-sale systems, or even TV box, smart walkie-talkies, you know, this is a case study I'm going to mention later. So moving down the road, we decide to extend our product line into the B2B space. So that's when AirJoy business came into play. So the
really quick before we get to AirJoy, I want to talk a little bit more about just the basics of MDM, because I think you kind of alluded to them a little bit in there. Okay. Obviously, devices supported sounds like smartphones, notebooks, tablets, maybe other devices, even some point of sale devices out there. What are some of the things that MDM is helping you with? I know that a lot of people are afraid that if I install this on my own device, they're going to be able to watch all my traffic or whatnot. Is it basically just to secure all points within that device, or what is that? What are MDM actually trying to do?
Security is definitely something that businesses care about, but based on the feedback we collect from our customers, providing remote IT services comes as a first priority, comes as the highest demand. So the category would divide into four different parts. So there are company-owned devices, there are customers-owned devices, there are manned devices, meaning there's a person operating the device at the device end, and there are unmanned devices, such as digital signage display, in a public area, unattended. So based on these four categories, we notice that there are specific requirements, you know, that people have, that the IT administrators have. So it's really industry specific, and you know, the pain points, the specific requirements you have. So we acted like a consultant or a customer success personnel that helping customers who come to us and see if we're a good fit for them.
So most organizations, it seems like they consider these things to be on devices that the actual users interact with. So like mobile devices, tablets, laptops, that kind of thing. But it sounds like you're saying that also MDM can impact enterprise level products that might not even be that kind of unmanned. They're just maybe devices and stuff that are on the network or need to interact with network data that are just out there, and they need to be able to be managed even if, let's say, the device is stolen or removed. Is that the case with AirPlay and some of the other solutions that are out there?
Well, like I said, there's a big portion of our customers who acquire our product for to provide IT services, and the problem to solve is without MDM, you usually have to send a technician out to the field. It's costly, it's time consuming, and so with remote. With the capability of having remote access to the device, will solve most of the problems.
Right. So I guess one example is I noticed that there was an organization a while back. We talked about a breach where somebody had gone into a store, one of the big stores, big brick and mortar stores out there, and they actually stole a POS device that had a bunch of data on it. Is that something that MDM can help with if these types of machines are just physically stolen?
Yeah, definitely. We do have customers that put security on top of everything, So we need to be able to track down the devices. We need right. to be able to provide location tracking or route tracking, to make sure the device is safe. It's still, being operated by an appropriate personnel. So a good example that we have is an industry of logistics. We have this customer in Europe who's in logistics, literally have over 2,000 trucks, running across the country. So first of all, they want to make sure that devices, this is to mention that each truck has the smartphone equipped, in a truck. So they want to make sure the trucks are tracked down. They want to make sure the trucks are, going the right way. They're not going extra miles. They're taking the shortest distance to reach the final destinations. And they want to know, if they where the truck is, if they lost connection, lost communication with the drivers. So security, tracking down the devices, make sure everything's up and running for better management purposes. So all that. So that will answer the question that you just asked.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. When we come back, we want to talk a little bit more about some of the implementations and, of course, more about the security usages of MDM. But before we do that, I do want to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Now, you're probably already storing data. It could be on-prem. It could already be in the cloud. But think about this. Wasabi is 80% cheaper than Amazon S3 and significantly cheaper than on-premise storage. Now, typically, you can store data in Wasabi's cloud for less than just the annual cost of the maintenance fees on the same amount of on-prem storage. That's right. Wasabi's disruptive price performance model makes buying cloud storage a natural addition. In fact, if you're a managed service provider, Wasabi is a perfect solution for you to sell because you can earn more while charging less. Now, there are two ways to pay here. You can pay as you go, or you can pay one time with reserved capacity storage. Now, Wasabi's reserved capacity storage makes buying cloud storage a natural addition to your on-prem storage. Now, if you're thinking about buying more hardware storage compared to the price against 5 years of just reserved capacity storage, you can purchase cloud storage in 1, 3, or 5 year increments and achieve greater discounts for term and capacity. Now, Wasabi's security is often even greater than on-premise storage. It provides 11 nines of durability. This means that on average, you'll lose one file every 649,000 years. So basically, you're never going to lose that file. And it's hosted in premier tier 4 data center facilities that are highly secure and fully redundant. In fact, Wasabi is secure by default, and all data stored in Wasabi Cloud is always encrypted at rest, even if the requested party doesn't specify encryption. Now, Wasabi follows industry best security models and design practices. They have access control mechanisms such as bucket policies and access control lists, and they can be used to selectively grant permissions to that data. Now, your data will be immutable. It's preventing data from being erased or altered And you'll be protected from hackers, malware, and even yourself. That's right. Sometimes we make mistakes. Now, Wasabi has active integrity checking where all objects stored are checked for integrity every 90 days. Plus, they're compliant. They have HIPAA, FINRA, and CGIS compliance as well. Now, Wasabi is not just highly secure, disruptive technology that's turning the industry on its ear. It's storage that's 80% cheaper and up to six times faster. Six times than the industry leaders out there. Now, if you're ready to reduce your COGS and get all things you need to be performant and compliant and secure, go try Wasabi right now. Go build something great. Calculate the savings for yourself and start a free trial of storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click the free trial link, and enter code ENTERPRISE. Join the movement and migrate your data to the cloud with confidence. Go to wasabi.com and make sure to use the offer code ENTERPRISE. And we thank Wasabi for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we're talking with Kevin Huang about MDM solutions out there. Kevin, I do want to bring my co-host back in because they're chomping at the bit here in the background. Chibrit, I want to throw this to you first. You have some questions about MDM, right?
Well, you know, a lot of this is, you know, MDM is a great platform, but we need, you know, I think our viewers are going to want to know what kinds of platforms can you do MDM for? And are there some limitations? You know, some platforms may not let you go as far as others.
In terms of platforms, it really comes to, you know, what kind of operating systems your devices are. You know, based on my observation, most devices out there are based on Android, but there are also Linux devices, there are Windows devices, there are even iOS devices that we have to manage. So, by nature, the more profound features we provide, to the device, really depends on the openness of the operating system. So for us, the reason why we're focusing on Android devices is because, you know, the Android devices, you know, has been, you know, booming in the past years. So like I said, other than the typical smartphones and tablets, the range of devices even extended to, you know, digital signage, pulse devices, walkie-talkies, you know, and even medical devices in the medical centers or hospitals. So that's why we selected the Android-based devices, you know, as our first stage in our product roadmap to fulfill, because we're just getting overwhelming requests from our customers wanting to manage their Android devices.
Great. You know, as our viewers start thinking, oh, maybe MDM sounds like a great idea. I should look at it, especially with COVID-19 coming up, and we went from maybe a 20% mobile workforce to 100% mobile workforce. What kinds of changes have you seen with MDM because of COVID-19?
That is a very great question. In the beginning of the COVID, we tried to figure out how much correlation we have, you know, with COVID-19 in terms of work from home. So at the end, we realized that if the devices are company owned, they're not in the super big urge, you know, having to adopt an MDM so they can remotely manage their company owned devices. But if the devices are customer owned, meaning our customers may be a managed service provider, you know, and before COVID, they had to send out technicians, you know, to the field to fix the malfunction devices. But during COVID, they're not able to travel, so they had to adopt some kind of MDM in a very short period of time, you know, so they can keep their work going. And a special topic I like to bring up is the medical field. We do get quite a few inquiries from hospitals or doctors during this special hard time. So there are two types of inquiries we get. One is directly related to COVID. So we get inquiries from doctors who actually take care of the COVID patients. So they're in the risk of getting infected. So they have these medical devices in next to the patients, monitoring the conditions of patients. So when they want to get the reading from the devices, they have to figure out a way, you know, to minimize the chance of having direct contact with the patients. So they came to us and asked us, hey, if your solution is able for me to access the tablet at the patient's spot, so I can read the readings remotely, so I don't have to get in close contact with the patients. So that's the category of personnel's indirect relation with the COVID patients. And the other category is actually the opposite. So for the medical personnel's who have no directly relationship with COVID. For example, doctors, they try to enter, they try to go to hospital, you know, last time, you know, the hospital has been a risky place. So a lot of medical personnel tend to spend more time working from home. But when they have to have the needs to access the medical devices, you know, to get the readings, you know, to do some kind of operations, and those devices are by any chance Android based, so they need the MDM solution for them to fulfill such requirements. So this is the special situations and requirements that we get during the pandemic.
Well, I'm excited about MDM as a whole because it's been fascinating to watch the industry develop from the very rough tools 5 or 6 years ago to much more finely grained tools now. But I'm curious, when you have a situation like we've had in the last 3 months, where many companies have gone from a policy where very few people were working on a mobile basis to one where the whole company is working on a mobile basis. How easy or difficult is it to roll MDM into your security situation when it almost literally has to be implemented company-wide overnight?
Okay, so the process of implementation really depends on the size of the organization. So if you're an SMB, you only have like 10, 20 devices you need to manage, you know, and those are carried by employees. It's fairly quick. So on the other hand, if you're an enterprise, you know, you have a lot of policies, securities, you know, all that need to be put into consideration. You need some kind of advanced version of MDM. So if you're out searching for ideal MDM for your organization, first of all, you need to define the size of your organization, how much policies or security concerns you have, you know, and if you have a professional IT team, or you're a small business and you're just a business owner that want to do everything, you know, without having sufficient IT knowledge. So there are variables. So before anyone or any organization that wants to start looking for an MDM solution, there's a process of self-assessment you have to, you have to go through. Like I said, size of your organization. If the devices are company owned or customer owned, if they're manned or unmanned, you need to answer all these questions in order for you to go out to find the most ideal solution.
You know, you brought up something in your answer that I'd like to poke at just a little bit more. And that was when you were talking about small business. Normally, when we think about MDM, you're thinking about a large organization that does have a dedicated IT staff with some expertise there to do implementation. Is MDM something that is a realistic possibility for smaller organizations? Let's say not necessarily a mom and pop. That may be a little too small. But an organization that perhaps only has a very small IT staff made up of generalists rather than one with different departments of specialists. Is MDM a realistic possibility for that smaller organization?
Yeah, definitely. MDM is not really a term or a product specifically designed for enterprise. So for us, we have a big portion of our customers are actually SMBs. So most of these customers start from as little as 10 devices. And of course, there are tutorials we have to provide online or on video conferencing. So the way we build our product, you know, have the concept of targeting users who are tech savvy or non-tech savvy. So the process of building this product, you know, have to put into consideration is it has to be intuitive, it has to be straightforward, it has to be self-explanatory, and the process of deployment has to be quick, regardless the amount of devices you have. Even, you know, you have as low as 10 devices, or that amount can go up to a couple thousand. You know, the process has to be minimized in order to have the exchange for better productivity.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for being here. We're running a little bit low on time. I did want to give you a chance to maybe tell the folks at home where their organizations to go to learn maybe a little bit more about MDM and more about the SAN Studio solutions that are out there.
Sure. We have this MDM solution, AirJoy Business. So you can get a free 14-day trial if you go to the website. If you're able to see the screen, or I can read it out. It's airjoy.com/twiet, airjoy.com/twiet. So just a few seconds for a brief product intro. First thing, you log into the admin console, you can see this device wall. So it, you know, everything you have, all the devices you have enrolled, you can see it at a quick glance. And you can do app management, you can do bulk file transfer, you can do application management. You can even have the option to use the kiosk mode to lock down the devices if the devices are designed for kiosk purposes. And we also recently launched this special product called Remote Support. So if you're in the IT service space, you're having to provide customer service, you know, to your end users, your customers, remote support will come into a very good play for you. And also, if you have a chance, you can email me at kevin.huang, H-U-A-N-G, at airjoy.com. I will be able to help you personally with a special discount if you eventually decide to get on board with us.
Thanks again, Kevin, for being here. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise podcast in the universe. So keep your IT team on high alert with Twiet. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-hosts. Starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chibert. What's going on with you in the coming week, and where can people find you?
Packing, more packing. Oh, but I finally got the last of the accessories on my wife's new Subaru Outback. And we have a Thule luggage carrier on the car now. So now it looks like a mainland car instead of a Hawaii car. Anyway, I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter. And if you want, throw me some show ideas. I'm Chibert at twit.tv, or better yet, why don't you use Twiet at twit.tv. And that way your show idea or comment hits all the hosts. And you know, Lou, we've had some good suggestions over the years.
Absolutely, we have. Yeah. Well, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's busy over there at Dark Reading, writing some great stuff. Curtis, where can people find you in the coming weeks and all of your work?
Well, you can always find me at darkreading.com. And, of course, especially over at the edge of Dark Reading, where some of my longer stuff is. In the coming week, we've got a piece on a couple of things that should be interesting. One, how has the topics that people are studying in IT changed during the pandemic? Some interesting stuff that I found as I talked to people who run the large websites for online learning and run some of the certification groups. I'm also doing a piece on an interesting question. If you could define a new normal in cybersecurity, what would it look like? And that's one where I'm actually interested in the opinions of the Twiat Riot. So if you want to send me a direct message to KG4GWA on Twitter, I would love to know what you think a new normal should look like.
Thanks, Curtis. Well, thanks to you as well. You are the audience member, the person who drops in each and every week to listen and to get your enterprise goodness. And we want to make it easy for you to watch and listen to catch up on enterprise news. Go to our show page right now, Enterprise to This Week in Enterprise Tech show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll find all of our amazing back episodes, the show notes, co-host information, guest information, links that we do during the show, as well as, more importantly, next to those videos, we actually have really helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version, your HD video version of your choice, and listen on any one of your devices and any one of your podcast applications as well. We're on all of them. It's the best way to stay on top of your enterprise and IT news every week. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends with the gift of Twiat. Definitely show them the way and give them Twiat as well. Now, if you already subscribed and you're available at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Fridays, we do this show live. You can check us out at live.twit.tv. You can actually come see how the show is run, come see the behind the scenes, come see how the pizza's made. That's right. Come see everything that's going on with Twiat live. Plus, if you're going to watch the show live, you can also jump into our chat room live as well. That's irc.twit.tv. There we have a lot of great characters in there each and every week. They give us some great, great content and some great questions for the guests and for the co-hosts. So definitely jump in there and be part of that as well if you're going to watch the show live. But if you can't watch the show live, can't be available during that time, that's okay. You can still be part of the discussion. We have a really great, amazing community out there. It's a 24/7 discussion over at twit.community. That's right, new website, twit.community. All the hosts are out there. We talk about the show content. There's a really great Twit community. And we talk about all types of things from technology, all different types of technology subjects. So go ahead and jump out there right now, twit.community. Be part of the 24/7 discussion. Remember, you can always follow me, twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my latest and greatest enterprise tidbits. Plus, I have really great conversations with people like you. And of course, I also post sometimes a lot of the stuff I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, especially if you want to go check out some of that stuff. You can go to developers.microsoft.com/office. There you'll see all the latest and greatest ways to customize your Office solutions to make it more productive for you. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support us each and every week of doing This Week in Enterprise Tech, and we could not do it without their support. So thank you to both of them. Of course, also thank you all the staff at Twit, as well as the engineers at Twit. You guys have been working really hard, especially during this time, with COVID and everything remote. Thank you for all your support. Also, thank everyone who thanks also to Mr. Brian Chi again, because he's not only our co-host over here, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the show bookings and all the show notes and the plannings for the show. And we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you again, Brian, for all your support. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank our TD for today, Jeff. Jeff, thank you for being our rock, man. You're keeping us on time. You're keeping us running smoothly. Thank you for all your support, man.
You're very welcome. I really enjoy it, guys. It's really fun. It took a while to catch up, you know, and try to understand what you guys are talking about, but I'm really getting educated every day, so it's pretty cool. Really love it. Good job, too. Everybody looked and sounded great.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for all your help. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twiat.
Hey, folks, I'm Micah Sargent, host of Hands on iOS right here on the Twit Network. If you've got iOS devices or watchOS devices or tvOS device, any kind of Apple mobile device, you are going to want to check out Hands on iOS. It is the best way to make the most of those devices. I walk through tips, tricks, and everything in between, plus answer your questions. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/HOI.